We can get ready whenever you are ready.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So let's get the meeting started. It's 8:01 a.m. on October 20th, 2021. And this is the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners. Good morning, everyone, for those in attendance. Ms. Michelson, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Diner?
Present.
Dr. Gill?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you. So let's see, for agenda number 3A, regarding the approval of the August 18th CSC regular and executive session minutes, Dr. Meyer is recused, so I'm going to make a motion to approve the minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
None opposed, motion passes. And for item 3B, I am recused. So Dr. Meyer, will you please do the honors?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd make a motion to approve the September 15th regular session minutes. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. The motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. So let's go to item number 4 on the agenda. And I wanted to state some important instructions to begin with. The Complaint Screening Committee, according to ARS 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. So complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, according to ARS 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda. According to ARS 38-431.03, subsection A2, to review confidential records, or according to subsection A3, to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. For those in attendance, please keep in mind that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the parties present and requests to speak. A person or a representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. So when you're speaking, please use initials for patients, children, and the complainant. And keep in mind that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. So with those important instructions in mind, the only complaint on the agenda for today is number 22-01 for Suzanne Mumby. Dr. Gill, since you are the lead, would you please provide an overview?
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Dr. Mumby is a graduate of California School of Professional Psychology in 2015, and she currently holds a license as a psychologist until August the 31st of 2022. An overview of this case: in 2020, complainant, the mother, otherwise known as KR, contacted her EAP provider to obtain therapy services for her teenage daughter, who has experienced, quote, mood instability, and the case was referred to Dr. Mumby. On November of 2020, Dr. Mumby, the licensee, began providing psychotherapy to the daughter in a virtual capacity through her practice, Mumby Psychological Services. According to board staff, Dr. Mumby reported that she now is no longer conducting her practice due to medical reasons. The mother submitted a complaint on July the 13th, 2021, citing multiple issues. Dr. Mumby canceled several sessions during treatment, often with little or no notice. Dr. Mumby was not responsive to the mother's text in a timely manner regarding changes in the daughter's behavior. Dr. Mumby was a no-show for scheduled virtual sessions on April the 16th and April the 22nd of 2021. Dr. Mumby was unresponsive to mother's text sent 4/23/21 and May the 3rd, 2021 regarding Dr. Mumby's missed appointments with the daughter. A day following the May 3rd text, the daughter tragically committed suicide. Mother sent a text to Dr. Mumby reporting the suicide, expressing her anger at Dr. Mumby and requesting Dr. Mumby not to call her ever. Dr. Mumby reportedly failed to respond to father's request for session notes following the suicide. Mother and father do live separately. Mother signed a release of information. Dr. Mumby requested so the documents could be sent to the father, but Dr. Mumby was unresponsive to father's request as of the date of the complaint, July the 13th, 2021. Dr. Mumby reportedly told mother that she would connect with father once Dr. Mumby was in a more secure area, given that she had connection problems with her computer and having better service, but then failed to do so. Dr. Mumby did not connect with father by phone as requested. Dr. Mumby allegedly was sick and could not connect. Attempts were made to connect with Dr. Mumby July the 12th, 2021, July the 15th, 2021, but no response was received. The Mosaic clinical staff reported an attempt to follow up with father, but mother called the third attempt to coordinate a meeting once Dr. Mumby returned from medical leave. On August 18th of 2021, board staff, as requested, granted Mumby a 30-day extension to submit a response to the complaint. Dr. Mumby was also notified she would need to submit daughter's complete record with her response to the board. So on September the 24th, 2021, Dr. Mumby submitted a half-page response that did not include supporting documentation or daughter's clinical record, complete clinical record as requested. However, on October the 1st, 2021, in response to board staff's request for the complete record, Dr. Mumby supplied daughter's session notes and two contact notes, but no further documentation. On October the 13th, 2021, board staff emailed Dr. Mumby requesting one, to submit the remainder of the daughter's record by October the 8th, including signed paperwork, referral information, electronic communication with parents, and the like. Two, to confirm appointment at this meeting today. And number three, to clarify her current caseload. On October the 11th, 2021, Dr. Mumby responded by email, apologized for the delay, said her daughter was hospitalized. She had no active patients, no intention to resume practice at this time. The staff, in review of the medical reasons Dr. Mumby cited in an email at a meeting during an executive session, was referred possible necessity of an executive session during this meeting. On October the 12th, Dr. Mumby emailed three files containing one, a release of information by the mother, PHQ questionnaire completed by the daughter, and a typed contact log. There were no signed documents from the parents regarding informed consent, no text or email correspondence with either parent. And this concludes my summary of this case.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. So after the case summary, let's see, I see that both the mother and the father are present. Thank you for being here. Ms. Michelson, is there any recommendation on what order we should proceed with obtaining their statements?
We can hear first from KR, who filed the complaint, and if OF would like to make a statement, he can do so afterwards. So KR, you can unmute your end, state your initials for the record, and you have up to 5 minutes to make a statement.
Thank you, Ms. Michaels. And KR, you may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to say thank you to the board for allowing us to speak today. So I'm gonna try to stay under my 5 minutes. On May 4th, 2021, I lost my 13-year-old daughter, my only child. I started seeing a change in Nairobi when she turned 13 in November of 2020. I thought I was being proactive by getting her therapy to help her work through the long pandemic. Her not being physically active, physically at school, being isolated at home, along with many other teenage issues. I trusted Dr. Bumby with our most precious gift, our daughter. I trusted her to guide her, to advise her, to give her compassion, to give her the tools to function successfully. I trusted her to do her job. But instead, we got someone who was uncommitted, uninterested, irresponsible, non-responsive, professionally passive, uncaring, disengaged, disrespectful, non-loving individual. Where is your accountability? Where was Nairobi's crisis prevention plan? Why didn't you report to us as parents that she was smoking weed? Where is her psychological evaluation plan? Why do I feel like you waited so long to give us those therapy notes so that you could falsify those notes? Why do I have that feeling? Did Nairobi ever tell you she was going to harm herself? And you didn't tell us. I remember the last text I gave to you on March 29th, where I told you about Nairobi being bullied, about Nairobi shutting down. I asked you for your help. I begged you for your feedback. You never could get your appointment straight. You never got another therapy session scheduled. All I got was excuses and more excuses, and you continued to push her to the side. Then 37 days later, she killed herself. Dr. Mommy, you don't understand. Do you know how it is to wake up on a 37th day, to walk into your child's room, to find her dead? Do you understand? And you have children. I don't understand. I hope that the board never gives you access to another child. I would never want another parent to feel the long-lasting, awful pain that I have to face every single day because my child is not here. I thank the board for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, KR. Thank you. The father, OF, if you have any statement to make, you can proceed right now.
Just a reminder, parents, you do not have to use your daughter's name. You can refer to her as daughter or use her initial. It's up to you. I just want you to know that, okay?
Okay. Just like what mother said, KR said, thank you, board, for allowing us to hear our complaint and to allow us to speak today. We brought our daughter because we thought we were doing everything right. and we brought our daughter to get professional help, because that's not what we, that's not our professional, that's not our expertise. Someone that she can talk to and open up besides the parents. And I know that, and in any therapy session, you have to ask the right questions to get the right answer, to get to the root of the problem. I'm a mechanic. I ask my customers the right questions to get to the root of the problem of their vehicle. And I understand that we all have free will, and but if she, the therapist would not be able to ask the right question and be consistent, I believe my daughter would be here today. Not, no call, no show, rescheduling the appointments, not letting the parents know that she is using a narcotic at a young age, not returning text messages on the primary matter, phone calls. You asked us to request a release of liability. We give it to you immediately. No response a weeks later. Still haven't get the correct notes. And those notes were inaccurate with dates and times. I no longer have my best friend, my only reason of living, my only reason of getting out of the bed. She is gone. And I'm not saying that it's Nandi's fault, but I believe in my heart that she was part of the problem, not part of the solution. I understand we all go through things with medical, financial things, but if she was too much of a load for her to handle and be professional and give our daughter 1,000% of her time, she could have referred her to somebody else. She didn't have to keep pushing her to the side, especially being 13 before as a young woman, knowing how it is growing up, and then magnified that now with all the access of the media and the mental stress being a teenager during this time. I don't know what consequences can be done or will be done, but we want justice in some form or fashion. But no matter what, it's never gonna bring our daughter back. Never gonna bring our daughter back. But we just don't want any other parent to go through this. I don't want another father to go through this, not be able to walk my daughter down the aisle, not to be able to be a grandfather, not be able to take my daughter to her first prom or graduation, move her into college, take her to get her driver's license. That is gone. Once again, we thank the board for allowing us to speak. And that's all I have to say at this moment.
Thank you. So I think if Dr. Mumbi is on the line and she would like to make a statement.
Mr. Diner, I apologize for interrupting. First would be the time for the committee to ask either mother or father questions, and then you can proceed from hearing from Dr. Mumbi.
Yes, yeah, thank you, Ms. Michelson, for reminding. So any committee members, do you have any questions to ask the mother or the father? Yes, Dr. Gill.
You're on mute, Dr. Gill.
I just want to thank the parents for being here today. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for being here.
Dr. Maya.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Though this is wholly insufficient, I want to offer my condolences to the parents. I'm sorry for your loss. The only question I have is, did you eventually receive your daughter's records? And if so, what date was that on?
I didn't, maybe the mother. I didn't receive any records.
Probably what she sent to you is what she sent to us. And all the dates and the times were wrong. And majority of the notes look the same.
When did you receive those from her? Do you recall?
I don't remember. I'm sorry. July, maybe August. Maybe Dr. Mumby can pull up the email where she emailed it, the date when she gave it to us. It was very, they were very vague notes.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. And I also wish to express my condolences to the mother and the father. So let's move on to hear from Dr. Mumby. Dr. Mumby, if you're on the line, would you please identify yourself? And you may wish to make a statement, and we may have any questions to ask you at this time.
Yes, good morning, board. I'm here. Thank you for coming, KR and OF. And my sincere condolences to you. And I'm very apologetic that we have not been able to discuss and consult about your daughter's care. I would like to keep this, my response brief. And the reason is for that is because my concern is my response, I cannot have it be in defense for myself. It's inappropriate for me to defend anything. Although every single thing can be defended and explained and understood and with backup plans, it would not bring Miss NF back. It would not. It is inexcusable. It is unprofessional. However, I do want to say within my due diligence, there is the one thing I wanted to express is that there was the lowest risk possible that was assessed at every single session, and there was utmost care and concern expressed and concerned. Even though it was virtual, it was present and consistent in that regard, and with follow-up concern with my assistant. And could it have been better? Absolutely. Absolutely, and there's never going to be anything that we can take back. And I will always have a heavy heart, and I'm carrying that today. I am. But I do want to express that there is absolutely no difference in the course of treatment that would have been contemplated. I am an expert in crisis intervention for over 20 years. There's absolutely no signs that were any different, and we had a very good rapport, and that is the one thing I wanted to express, is that there's no clinical justification for a higher level of care. There was no risk factors that were any different. There was no previous suicide attempt. There was no other concerns that were identified. And so that is the biggest thing. And I understand as a mother, as myself, we look back and we have regrets and concerns and what could we have done different? And that is the biggest thing I wanted to express to the parents, that I believe what we did, what we could do, we did everything that we could do. In the course of providing care at the time with the information that we had. I believe that the parents did absolutely everything they could, considering that it was a pandemic and we didn't have in-person services. If we could have had in-person services, that would have been obviously better. And I do greatly apologize for the inconsistencies that were provided. And the only thing I wanted to say is that's why we had a psychological coordinator who was consistently referred to, and she was the backup because I was not available to be that person. I was working in a secure area, and I did refer. I had to have Jacqueline as my backup. I absolutely had that. and that was needed. To be the responsive person, we had to be the team to provide that, to communicate, to see how NF was doing, and to make sure that communication was consistent. And I just wanted to say that there is absolutely no excuse, but the further information to the board, I would like to provide in an executive session to help explain if there is information that the board would want based on specifics of the nature of exact appointments missed. And the last appointment I have was April 7th was the last appointment that was made. And the last attempted appointment was the day after we lost NF. So I would request an executive session to explain more, if that's something the board would want to hear. But that would be required for medical reasons.
Thank you, Dr. Mumby. Ms. Galvin, I'm leaning toward calling for an executive session for confidential information. If I see Dr. Gill shaking his head. Yes,
I'll second that.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
May we have the motion include legal advice in the event that that's necessary?
Yes, sure. So it's for confidential information and for legal advice. That's my motion.
And Dr. Gill seconded that. We'll take a vote. And then KR and OF, the board is going to go into a breakout room. The committee is going to go into a breakout room to discuss with Ms. Mumby confidential health information and perhaps receive legal advice. Just stay on the line and we will be back. Okay, so we'll take a vote. Yeah, we need a vote.
Yes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. The motion passes. So let's get into the executive session.
Mute Dr. Mumby to call back into the open session. Ms. Michelson, could you text her, reach out to her to see if she's like going to rejoin? Here she is.
We actually have her calling okay. Right now. Dr. Mumby, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
But before we continue with the committee meeting, I wanted to explain or to clarify to the parents, just so you understand, we went into executive session to receive confidential health information as it related to Dr. Mumby and not health information that related to your daughter. I just wanted to be sure that you understood that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Ms. Galvin. So this is 8:44 a.m. We are back in open session. Dr. Mumby, is there any thing you want to add to your statement in open session?
Just my statement, my invitation stands that I still want to provide as much information and support and compassion to the family in their time of grief. And if it's preferred from another provider, that can be arranged, complimentary, and I can get that arranged for the family. Anything that they can suggest that would be helpful for them, my heart goes out to them, and I would do anything to help them in their time of grief. And I sincerely apologize. But I do want to say that I cared so much about their daughter. She was bright, beautiful, so talented, so tenacious, and has such a lively spirit. I enjoyed working with her, and I will never, ever forget her. I do not want you ever to think that I was not committed but I understand your pain and I respect it. And I accept it. And I apologize.
Thank you, Dr. Mumbi. So if I may ask you a question, how much time elapsed do you think from the records that you have between the parents requesting the file on their daughter from you and you giving all of the documents and information to them?
Within the HIPAA guidelines provided, from the time we received the signed information request, it was within the guidelines.
Could you specify roughly days, months, hours?
It should be July 30th. No, I'm sorry, July 20th.
So if I'm hearing this right, April 7th was your last session with the daughter. Add 37 days, and that would be somewhere in the middle of May, and then June and July is when you, so roughly 2 months after that is when you release the records to the parents. Is my math right?
Oh, that is correct. Yeah, there was no request. In fact, there was a directive to not contact them. I attempted to contact them by text and phone, and I was directed to never contact them again. And so I respected that. And so when I received the information to contact the father, I did that by phone. And then I had to follow our confidential policy to have the release of information signed, and the parents did just as requested. And then when we received that, there was the records provided within the HIPAA guidelines, and it was not within the parent's preference to be immediate. And I understand, being a parent myself, we'd want that immediately and right away. However, we are a very small private practice, and being that my clinical coordinator was also on medical leave, I did not have the capability to provide that in an immediate manner, but it was within the HIPAA guidelines.
So what was the date when the parents requested the records from you, and how much time period elapsed when you actually provided those records to them?
June 21st. I believe June 21st.
So June 21st was the request, and then you said July.
I believe.
July, can you ballpark the date for us?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it was June 21st and July 20th. And it was down to the deadline, and it was very difficult to meet because of my medical condition. It's very hard, but it was provided.
Got it. So roughly 30 days between the request for records and release of the records. So thank you. I don't have any further questions, but Dr. Meyer and Dr. Gill might have. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Dr. Mumbi. And I just want to state, I understand your concern about not trying to avoid causing additional harm, but with a complaint on your license, you are allowed to defend yourself and answer these questions. And I think it's important that you do. My first question is, where is the informed consent forms for this case?
The informed consents were in November. That was sent by my assistant, and they would have been received November 12th, I believe. And I believe what happened with those is that KR, I think the email was that they were returned, but the signature may or may not have been shown on my format or something to that regard, but they were returned. And we had the verbal that was provided. So I believe that was the case.
There are no,
heard from November.
There are no documents discussing informed consent that I saw. Did I miss those?
No.
Okay. So if you have any informed consent documents, signed or not, I would suggest you submit those, because currently this
does
not have informed consent. And so I'm concerned about whether we have the full records or not. You were multiple times, it was requested that you submit the entire record. If you're saying you do have informed consent, then you did not submit the entire record. When this goes to the board, I recommend you submit everything. Second question is about your therapy notes. Is this an electronic health record, or just Word documents or fillable PDF? What kind of record keeping are you using?
Yeah, a Word document that is in a protected health system that was PHI, that level of security. I don't know how to describe it, but yeah.
Okay, so they're just Word documents that are stored securely.
Right, there you go. Thank you.
Okay, because there's no timestamps to show when these were done. There's not even a date for when you signed it. The only dates on any of these records are the date of the session, but there's no evidence that would at all suggest when they were completed. My next question is, in April, when you were saying you couldn't attend sessions, that you were in some other setting, why didn't you refer the client? When the claimant was asking for consistency in sessions with her sessions for her daughter, why didn't you refer her to another provider?
We did. Yes, that was consistently provided from my psychological coordinator on at least two occasions. And sorry, there was a discussion.
What was provided by a psychological coordinator?
The option for a referral. That was something that was discussed. And also there was options for phone sessions with KR was insistent that they did not want phone sessions, which is fine. But there was attempts to do alternative types of treatment because of the different difficulties with technology and the different settings. We were trying to be very creative, but because of the insistence of doing things in a specific way, in a specific manner, we did offer that on two occasions, which was declined, which was fine. And also because of my schedule changing, we needed a specific date. We were confirmed, and a standing appointment is something that is of convenience. It's not required by any type of provider, but that's something that was of convenience that we had previously offered, but we weren't able to offer going forward. But KR requested, and we were trying to accommodate. So there was a gap in services, but there was still communication, trying to figure out what would be best. And in that, there was no reports of concerns of escalated behavior or concerns or crisis. And again, there was, always the option of having the referral. And the concern was with the EAP, when they contacted me, they said that they had tried for months to try to find a clinician that was acceptable for KR, someone who was familiar and willing for culturally sensitive matters in the African American community, minority and oppression, dynamics. And so that was something that was very important to KR. And so it was already that rapport that was built. And it was this joint decision that we were going to try to move forward. But it was offered, definitely.
So do you feel that you were providing appropriate and sufficient care throughout throughout the treatment of the client?
To be honest, I don't believe a lot of us in COVID are doing what we want to do. I want to have a clinic. I want to have in-person sessions with our adolescents. I believe they deserve that. And I believe wholeheartedly with KR that we needed to at least do virtual. But because we didn't have clinics open at that time, this is what we needed to do. So our adolescents were not isolated. I believe we were doing everything we could do based on the pandemic. That's all I really can say, that yes, I was doing everything that I could do, as well as offering referrals. But would I have done more if I could? Absolutely, without a doubt.
From reading the records, my understanding is that the mother first requested records on May 25th after a delay. You then sent her the release of information to be filled out on June 16th, which she then signed and returned to you. And then you are reporting that you submitted the records to her on July 20th. Is that correct?
No, unfortunately, that is not correct. So basically, there was a clear directive. I reached out right away to KR to express my sincere condolences and offer any follow-up assistance and crisis intervention, which I was informed right away to never contact them again. And I immediately obliged by that. And there was no contact until I don't know the exact date, but I believe it must have been I don't know the exact date, I'd have to check, but there was a request to follow up with OF. And that was just to follow up for a phone call. But there was no specific information about what that was about. And so that request came in on 621.
The ROI is signed. There's a 6/16/21 date on it.
Right. That's when they signed it. We received it 6/21 when the office was opened. Right.
So she sent it back, but you didn't receive it until the 21st. Is that
correct?
Okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to look at these text messages.
Yeah, and we sort of sent a confirmation that it was received to verify that.
And Dr. Meyer, just to clarify, when I reviewed the text messages from the mother and the emails, it looks like she initially reached out on May 25th about that. There were some exchanges about the ROI form, and it looks like it wasn't until a couple weeks later that Dr. Mumby's practice sent it to her on June 16th. Mother signed the form the same day, and then according to Dr. Mumby's contact log, then on July 20th, about a month later, is when they were sent. So it looks like there was some delay in getting mom the ROI.
Thank you for clarifying those dates. Okay, my last question, Dr. Mumby, is my understanding is that you are not providing psychological services out of your private practice at this time. Is that correct?
Sorry. Yes, that's correct.
Are you providing psychological services at any location? Are you working anywhere else as a psychologist?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Dr. Gill, do you have any questions?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Mumby, for being here. I also have concerns about whether in fact you submitted a full record. Did in fact you submit a full record to the board?
It appears that the informed consent was not sent from November 12th, and that can easily be corrected. I did not intentionally send any type of text messages. I did not send those. The record, I believe I do need to send that informed consent if that was not provided, but everything else should have been provided.
Well, there was nothing, this was a referral to an EAP, and there were no EAP documents in the record that you provided. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I did clarify that. Excuse me for explaining. So initially it was an EAP referral, and the EAP referral was a discounted rate. But because, like I said, the difficulty and months providing any type of referral for NF, I felt obligated and very compelled to want to help. So I accepted the case, even though it was a discounted rate. But there was miscommunication. They verbally authorized 10 sessions. Turned out it was only 5. Then I had COVID. Basically, it turned out there was going to be a little bit of difficulty even getting payment. And I said, you know what, let's just do pro bono, no big deal. So the whole case was pro bono. So there is no documentation or follow-up from the EAP.
Well, wouldn't there have been at least some paperwork because it was a referral to the EAP? Wouldn't there be paperwork with respect to that referral that you would have in your possession and that you would submit to the board?
November.
Whether it's pro bono or not.
There probably should have been something in November. I should check. So let me clarify, there was a change in our system that we were using. So I would have to check in the old email to see, and I can do that for the board. Yes.
And also,
to be clear, the referral had no prior history or concern of suicidal ideation or any impulsivity or concerns of that nature. But I will definitely look for that email and provide that too.
As sort of a follow-up to the informed consent issue, did you discuss with the parents the issue of confidentiality and the issues in terms of providing treatment to a young teenager and what information to share with the parents and what to keep private?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The very first session was a thorough session, and that was with KR primarily, and that was explained and also with NF moving forward, and it was agreed upon of how that would proceed. And actually there was several times where there was offers for KR to attend. There was an agreement with my psychologist coordinator for KR to attend one time, and for whatever reason KR was not able to attend the session, but yes, that was definitely discussed about moving forward, about how we would proceed with sharing information, crisis planning, things of that nature that would be elevated to share, that would come up.
And, you understand that the problem mm-hmm. here is that none of that is documented.
So that would have, I think that's heard in the informed consent, I believe, though.
Well, that would be part of it, yes. But it's a yeah. very specific part, particularly in working with teens, what's to be shared, mm-hmm. what's not to be shared. That's
yeah.
critical in the care. And I think the mother brought that up in part of her presentation, I think their concern was that you didn't share with them her substance misuse, for example. So there was some confusion about where that line was drawn in terms of what's to be covered in a confidentiality and what is not.
Oh, absolutely. And that was not information that I was privy to. Absolutely not. That was information that mother had provided to me in our communication and providing our coordination of care for NF. That wasn't information that I ever withheld.
Oh, okay.
KR. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I have a final question. At least for me, I have some concerns, particularly in early May when you, according to the parents, did not attend a scheduled session at least twice. And then there were efforts to try to reach you without success. And I just wonder if you want to comment on your lack of availability at that time and not following through on a scheduled appointment.
I'm trying to look at the dates here. Without having the dates specifically in front of me.
It's April 16th and April 22nd.
Let me look at my thing here and see. There was only April, let me go back. Okay. So actually, it was April 15th. So basically, there was an issue April 15th. That was the day that we did have a session and it was scheduled. However, I was in a very rural area. And as mentioned before, KR was very adamant about not having phone sessions. We must have virtual sessions. I was not able to connect. There was no connection. And so we were offering an immediate session for the 16th, and that was refused. And that was outlined in my note right there, the clinical contact note. And the standing appointment for the 28th. It just says that she did not want to schedule anything unless it was a standing appointment. And again, that's something that we were being very accommodating and something that we wanted that consistency and were able to provide in the beginning. But as I was helping this other clinic in their time of need and COVID and being in the rural area, I just was not able to provide the virtual sessions and needed that flexibility providing services on a different day. And unfortunately, we need that break in care. But that is not something that is uncommon in a practice. Standing appointments aren't guaranteed. And as I said, there was no critical crisis that was occurring. And in fact, Ms. NF was actually demonstrating stability, doing well, communicating, and there was actually a recommendation of going to biweekly sessions. So there was not an indicator that that would be problematic. So there was a missed session, that is true. It was on April 15th. However, my coordinator did communicate that there was that technical difficulty and that was of course not appropriate, but unfortunately it does occur and we did try to make definite immediate amends on the following day.
Dr. Meyer, just to clarify, for this appointment on April 16th, if you look at page 66 of the file, which is mother's text messages with Dr. Mumby, in reviewing Dr. Mumby's response, it says that she didn't get out of her locked facility until after 8 p.m. There was no indication about connectivity issues.
Maybe I have the wrong date. Maybe that's the following date. I do apologize if I have the wrong date.
Dr. Mile, I did provide you with the investigative report, which includes all this, so it might be helpful to reference these page numbers as well. When I'm looking at page 72 of the file, which includes the text messages for the subsequent week on April 22nd, the mother sends multiple messages that the link isn't working, asking what occurred, and I do not see any response. So it's April 16th and April 22nd.
When you said the link isn't working, was that the 15th?
No, April 16th is when you responded that you apologized, you were in a locked facility and did not get out in time. April 22nd is when mother sent you multiple text messages that you that the link was not working, what happened with the session, and got no response.
Exactly. And that was something, if my follow-up response as well was, I please reminded them to always contact my psychological coordinator, who is a standby staff person who handles all of those calls, especially since March 22nd, when I was in a locked facility and not allowed to have a phone. And that was the plan moving forward. And that was something that was consistently, you know, redirected. So I do apologize. It might have been the wrong date, but that was the difficulty there.
I don't have any more questions. Thank you, Dr. Mumby.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Any further questions for Dr. Mumby? Hearing none, let's move into deliberations. So as a reminder for everyone, deliberations is the time for the committee members to discuss the case amongst themselves without any input from the complainant or from Dr. Mumby. So in terms of deliberations, Dr. Gill, since you're the lead, do you want to get us started?
Well, to put it as simply as I can, I think there are a number of violations here, both ethical and legal. It's not my standing to comment too much on the legal aspect. I think this case should be sent to the initial review board committee. And I think the violations come down to informed consent, issues of failure to discuss levels of confidentiality, and personal problems and conflicts that appear to interfere with appropriate treatment. I think it borders on patient neglect. I think that record maintenance is not proper. There's still confusion about dates, just for starters. And I think the board should address the issue of whether this person should be licensed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I actually wrote out what I wanted to say because I just had so many concerns. This is such a tragedy, and in looking at these records, my thought is that with better care, a child's death by suicide might have been avoided. If we look at the course of treatment, after just a few initial sessions, there was a break in services in December 20 and January 21. The text messages from the claimant document a lack of clear communication from Dr. Mumby. She continued to schedule sessions and then would cancel or no-show. Dr. Mumby stated that the claimant was offered a referral and declined. And I can understand why the claimant did not go elsewhere for services. It's hard to get in. A therapeutic relationship had apparently been established, and Dr. Mumby repeatedly scheduled a session for the following week after a cancellation. But how could the claimant know that the sessions would continue to be canceled at the last minute or no-showed? after that period, there was a section of consistent sessions. But I also have some concerns about those sessions. In each note, Dr. Mumby reported that the client was improving, but Dr. Mumby also documented that the client was reporting an increase in the severity of her symptoms from session to session. So those notes are inconsistent. The client was reporting things were getting worse, and that was documented by Dr. Mumby, but then she turned around and said, oh, she's doing better and improving. Then at the end of March, the client's mother reported significant problems to Dr. Mumby, but according to the session note, those concerns were not addressed at all. Then we have several no-shows, and not responding to the claimant's texts, including the day before the client died by suicide. The clinical record and text messages, I think, document Dr. Mumby's inconsistency and non-responsiveness. And I would suggest that this evidence indicates gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist and abandonment of her client. There were also significant problems with record keeping. There's no evidence of informed consent. There's no evidence of Dr. Gill was saying, that any referral from the EAP. And at some point in the text messages, there was a communication about the number of sessions being covered by the EAP was running out. And so did they want to consider using insurance? So, and said what the insurance name was, and they were going to look at moving over to that. So that everything was pro bono and there's no documentation, it just doesn't seem accurate. What else? No evidence, no informed consent. The concern with the lack of dates on when these records were actually completed. And then finally, the records were incomplete. There's a lack of documentation of all of the contact with the guardian. If it weren't for the claimant's text messages, we wouldn't know about all of the no-shows and missed sessions. And I was shocked that there was no documentation in the record that the client died by suicide. I mean, that wasn't even mentioned in there. And then finally, the lack of responsiveness to the record request is concerning. It took over 2 months for the claimant to receive records. She first asked for it on May 25th. After a delay, she received the ROI, which was signed and returned on the 16th. And then it still wasn't sent out until more than a month later. If I had lost a client, this case would have been the highest priority, and I would have been responding immediately to the family's requests. I don't understand why it took over 2 months to provide the records. Those are my main concerns. And I've got a list of the possible violations, which include ARS 32-2061, 16E, gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist, H, failing or refusing to maintain records, L, practicing psychology while impaired or incapacitated to the extent and in a manner that jeopardizes the welfare of a client. I'm not sure about O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe. Well, yeah, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. I think saying to schedule a video session and then say, no, I went off where I can't access it, so I'll give you a phone call, even though that may not be clinically appropriate. This was unprofessional. V, abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of immediate care without making suitable arrangements for continuation of the care. CC, failing to make available to a client or patient the records. And DD, violating an ethical standard, and that includes 3.10, informed consent, 3.12, interruption of psychological services, 6.02, documentation of professional and scientific work and maintenance of records, and 10.01, informed consent to therapy.
Dr. Meyer, would you also consider section 3.04, avoiding harm? If you believe that's applicable?
I mean, I don't see intention here. I see negligence. So,
if I could add, I would add for the ethical code 4.02, discuss levels of confidentiality, and 2.06, personal problems and conflicts, which certainly is consistent with Dr. Meyer's reporting. But I would include those as under DD.
Yeah, I don't know that 3.04, avoiding harm, fits exactly.
Sounds good. I just wanted to double check. Okay. Thank you.
So I'd make a motion to move this case to the full board for possible all of the possible violations that we just mentioned.
Seconded. So there's a motion and a second. Ms. Galvin, just making sure you got all of the references.
I do have all of the references. I believe staff does as well. I would ask, after a vote is taken, I have one additional request.
Okay, so let's call the vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. The motion passes. Yes, Ms. Galvin.
I was wondering if the committee could request KR and OF. KR made a couple of statements during her presentation that in her belief, the records were falsified and that they contained inaccurate dates. And I believe it would be beneficial for the board's review of this matter if you could submit to Ms. Michelson your analysis and any information you have about the dates that you did attend and if session notes did not correspond to dates that attended. I don't know if you have, you know, evidence from the insurance or whatever, but any information you have that could substantiate your position that the notes were do not coincide with sessions that were actually attended. And you can speak with Ms. Michelson about when you should have that to her.
I believe in my initial complaint, there's a list, and on that list it tells you the sessions that she actually had, and it has the dates. And when you look at Dr. Mumby's notes, those dates do not match up. And number two, I was told at the very end, after my daughter passed away, that all this was pro bono. She didn't do it through EAP. She didn't do it through my insurance after my daughter passed away. So I wouldn't be able to get that information from EAP. I can try to see if Dr. Mumby received payment from EAP, because she told us everything was pro bono after.
I'd like to ask staff to request any records from the EAP about this case, any referrals, any documentation of services.
Billing or payments issued.
Yes.
And then so maybe Jennifer, we could have some sort of spreadsheet that looks at, you know, KR's indication of sessions held versus the date of the notes. And if you need anything additional, we can go back to KR and OF.
Yes, certainly I can do that comparison and reach out if needed.
Thank you.
If I could make a brief comment.
Yes, Dr. Gill.
Whether the services are pro bono or not, the responsibility for professional conduct is still present. So that's not a defense, and that doesn't argue for lower level of care. All the ethical and legal issues still apply, whether it's pro bono or not. That's all.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. Anything else we need to discuss? Any more information we need before the case goes to the full board?
Well, is this the place to discuss issues of licensure?
Well, I think part of the motion was to suggest to the board that the board consider some kind of suspension, revocation, or even voluntary surrender. So I think it's within the scope of what's getting forwarded to the board. But I also realize, Dr. Gill, now that you mentioned it, there are specific statutes that relate to that. But I think that's something that would depend on how the matter is agendized for the board. And Ms. Galvin, I'm sure, can take care of that.
Thank you, Mr.
And that is something that we can discuss with the chair and staff. I believe this matter will be on the board's November 5th agenda. There is also another case scheduled for that time involving Dr. Mumby. We'll hear both at the same time.
That is correct. And I will be noticing both parties as well here today shortly after the meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So I think we covered everything we can think of right now. It is 9:27 a.m. and I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Seconded.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes, none opposed. Thank you everyone for being here.
Thank you.
Aye.